There was also a shabby wooden bed for the minimal post-operative care that Arrigo felt necessary at times A, although it was rarely used. The Rio doctors were invited to stand by the operating area and observe as closely as they wished. Arrigo was his usual self, a gruff, abrupt, almost arrogant. A largish window let in adequate light, and the Rio doctors steeled themselves to watch Arrigo in action. Maria Silveiro was ushered in by her husband, and then Arrigo took over. He half pushed, half guided the woman onto the flat door that served as the operating table, having spread some old newspapers on it beforehand. He called for Altimiro to bring his instruments, and as usual, they rested in a battered tin can. There were a pair of tweezers, a couple of scalpels, a paring knife, and some scissors. Arrigo was in his trance-like state that characterized his personality change to that of Dr. Fritz, a change so vivid that reporters and even other doctors came to refer to him by that name instead of Arrigo. Speaking with his guttural German accent, Arrigo turned to the husband, ignoring his distress and worry, and asked whether he preferred the operation to be done by incision in the abdominal wall or by way of the vagina. The husband preferred the latter. Without further ceremony, Arrigo asked the husband to lift the dress of the patient. Then he immediately began the operation with extraordinary rapidity. The two doctors from Rio watched in disbelief. In any operation of this type, a speculum is obligatory. This is a surgical instrument that spreads the tissues or openings in the body so that full inspection can be made 101, and the instruments introduced into the area without impediment. Arrigo at EMS Scantiarmamentarium included no such refinements. They watched as he shoved three pairs of scissors and two scalpels into the vagina, each one with a single violent movement. The doctors immediately turned their observation to the patient. Surely, they felt, there would be agonizing pain from this crude procedure. However, she lay calm and motionless, with no response whatever. In describing what happened next, Dr. Margues said, Arrigo was taking hold of one half of the scissors. Then we began to see the other side of the scissors start to move alone. It was as if another hand had taken hold of the free handle and was beginning to make clear motions, causing the scissors to snip and cut. The sound of metals and tissues being cut was obvious. In moments, Dr. Fritzer removed the scissors. When he saw bleeding begin, he ceased what he was doing, and said, O Lord, let there be no more blood. There was no further hemorrhage, as the operation went on. He reached then for the pair of tweezers. Calling this to our close attention, he pushed them into the vaginal opening and took out a piece of tissue some 31 inches long and 15 inches in width. The patient was relaxed and unruffled during the whole process, which lasted only a few minutes. She reflected no pain at all. There was no anesthesia administered, nothing was sterilized, and no antisepsis was involved either. Later, she was to give birth to a healthy son, and regained her full health. Both doctors found themselves in the position of having to accept what they had clearly seen, to be a slave to the facts. As one of them put it. Yet they knew they would be exposing themselves to censure if they publicly acknowledged what had happened. Dr. Margues made no bones about it, and reported the experience in detail to his colleagues and others. The problem, of course, was credibility, and what reporting such an event might do to destroy the credibility of a doctor who had the courage of his convictions and spoke out. It was not an easy decision for a professional man. The 102 official position of the medical societies was clearly defined. Arrigo was a curandero and a charlatan, if not a practitioner of witchcraft. It was an open and shut case, and the Medical Society of Minas Gerais was champing at the bit at the slowness of the police division of robbery and falsification for not expediting the legal proceedings and bringing the whole thing to an end. They surmised, probably correctly, that there were high government officials whose lives or those of their relatives had been inexplicably saved by Arrigo, and thus were not at all interested in pushing for the incarnation of a man they owed so much to. And perhaps these people of influence were responsible for the pilgrimage of many more doctors to Congonhas do Campo who were willing to take the risk of professional censure. Whatever day the visiting doctors arrived in the village was unimportant as far as representative cases were concerned. Each day Arrigo faced such a broad spectrum of diseases and disorders that any doctor could find something of specific interest for any medical problem. But some doctors came to Congonhas do Campo as the result of specific cases they had followed with interest. These were desperate patients who came to Arrigo as a last resort after all else in medical science had failed. Dr. José Tilda Copyright Hortensia de Madeiros found himself observing Arrigo for just such a reason. Dr. Madeiros, who was an X-ray specialist with the State Institute of Cardiology, was the friend of a young couple who were deeply concerned because of the illness of the wife. Although Dr. Madeiros had been practicing medicine for many years, and had been trained in his X-ray specialty in Sweden for 2 years, he could do little for the wife, a young Polish woman in her late 20s. The husband was Austrian. She had been rushed to Pronto Socorro Clinic in S.A. Tilda Pondo Paolo, where she arrived in desperate condition, with symptoms of an intestinal obstruction. She was examined and X-rayed, and it was apparent that an immediate operation was necessary. During the surgery, it was found that her transverse colon was blocked by a tumor, and this was re-103, moved. A colostomy was performed, in which an opening is cut in the abdomen and the colon is joined to it to permit defecation into a colostomy bag. The tumor was rushed to the laboratory for a pathological examination, but the surgeons felt sure that the woman had cancer, and that there was little hope. The ganglia on her peritoneum were grossly enlarged, and a nodule on the liver had been noted during the operation. The laboratory test clearly confirmed carcinoma. With the tests confirming malignancy, the case was hopeless. All the doctors consulted agreed to that. However, it was decided that one final attempt should be made, and she entered the Central Cancer Hospital in S.A. Tilda Pondo Paolo for another operation. There was a sense of futility about it, but both the husband and Dr. Madeiros felt that nothing should be left undone. The abdomen was opened again, and by now the condition was even more hopeless. The cancer had metastasized throughout the entire abdominal area, a new growth the size of a large egg was found in the left section. Meanwhile, the patient at TMS weight had dropped mercurially. She was now slightly over 70 pounds. She had previously weighed nearly 130. The Sergioona TMS report at the Central Cancer Hospital was even more pessimistic than that of the clinic. He reported the case to be totally incurable, and outside the resources of medical science. Two independent checks were made on the metastasized tissue, one by the chief of anatomic pathology at the Central Cancer Hospital. The diagnosis was clearly reconfirmed as monocellular metastatic carcinoma, and the two independent reports concurred without question on this. The patient was overwhelmed by a carcinogenic invasion. The prognosis in the reports stated a potential life expectancy of 2 months at best. Dr. Madeiros rechecked all the facts of the case, and found there was nothing else to do but agree. With his wife little more than a living skeleton, the husband came to Dr. Madeiros with one last, and probably futile suggestion. He would like to take his wife to Congonhas do Campo to see Arrigo. He realized how ridiculous this 104 might be, but if Dr. Madeiros thought she could survive the trip, he would like to do it. Madeiros had heard of Arrigo, and his interest had been piqued by the reports coming down to S.A. Tilda Pondo Paolo from Congonhas do Campo. He also knew of the attitude of the medical societies toward the healer, but, as a doctor of both curiosity and compassion, he saw no harm in making one last stab, even if it failed miserably. And because he was a close friend of the couple, he decided to accompany them. At least, he thought, he could try to keep the wife out of pain on the long trip. It would be disastrous, the doctor knew, to attempt the trip by car or bus. Instead, a small plane was chartered to fly to the airport at La Fayette, the closest air facility to Congonhas. The wife had now faded to 65 pounds. The patient was carried by her husband to Arrigo, accompanied by Dr. Madirose. In the stillness of the musty clinic, Arrigo Atiem's voice was booming with his German accent, sprinkled with occasional German phrases. The husband, being Austrian, gathered the courage to speak to Arrigo in German, and was answered in that language. Arrigo gave the desperately ill woman no special attention. She was simply one among the many hundreds who filed by his table on that day or any other day. He looked at her, his eyes glazed in the usual trance state he experienced every time he assumed the character of Dr. Fritz. His hand swiftly scrawled a prescription. He merely said to the wife, "You take this, and get well at E.M." The trio were abruptly ushered to Altimiro, who instantly typed up the prescription. Within 2 hours they were headed back to S.A. Tilde Pando Paolo. On the plane, Dr. Madirose studied the prescription. Though the medicines comprised up-to-date pharmaceuticals at that time, he considered the combination totally irrational, and the dosages prescribed were far in excess of any ordinary prescription. The drugs included kanamycin, olobintin, neurarubin, and dextysine, all trademarked drugs and available at almost any drugstore in Brazil. Kanamycin was a drug of Japanese origin, manufactured under special license in Rio de Janeiro. It was basic 105, a line antibiotic, used mainly in intestinal infections. It had caused serious side effects at times. Olobintin was an ancient German formula manufactured in Rio, designed to increase the defensive forces of the organism, and supposedly had special effectiveness in fetid bronchitis and pulmonary gangrene. It was an injectable. Dr. Madirose could find no real reason for this to be included, but he had heard from other doctors that Arrigo Atiem's prescriptions had a strange way of working, regardless of their absurdity. He had also heard that when other doctors tried to imitate Arrigo Atiem's unconventional combinations, the drugs were ineffective. Neurarubin was also produced in Brazil, and consisted of a vitamin B complex, with a heavy proportion of vitamin B. The rationale for dextysine was obscure. 12. In spite of his pessimism that the drugs would do any good, Dr. Madirose agreed to take a chance, out of frustration and despair, if nothing else. When they arrived back in S.A. Tilde Pando Paolo, he administered the abnormal dosages and waited, feeling very non-professional in doing so. Within a week, the fatally ill patient improved to the point where she could get out of bed and walk around her room. By the end of the second week, she had regained over 20 pounds of her lost weight. After 6 weeks of the treatment, she weighed nearly 5 pounds more than when she had first been stricken with the disease. Dr. Madirose could hardly contain his surprise. He agreed to return to Congonhas do Campo with the patient and her husband for a recheck by Arrigo. He was now very anxious to follow up his observation on the healer, and especially interested in confirming the apparent cure. To the best of his knowledge, the patient appeared to be permanently on the road to recovery. She was still walking around with the awkward colostomy bag as a means of getting rid of waste matter. Arrigo had said nothing about having it removed, and, for the time, Madirose saw no sense in challenging Arrigo Atiem's advice, in the face of the unbelievable success achieved thus far. Back in Congonhas do Campo, Arrigo abruptly pronounced the patient out of danger and presented her with two more prescriptions, as unconventional as the first. 1/106 of the new medicines was an antibiotic used for urinary tract infections. Dr. Madirose found he could at least agree with this logic, since the colostomy and original intestinal obstruction had had an extremely damaging effect on the urinary system. The patient returned to Arrigo for a third time, with her mother. Arrigo declared unequivocally that she was completely healed. He instructed her to undo the operation at E.M., referring to the colostomy. She returned to S.A. Tilde Pando Paolo with the news, and arrangements were immediately made to surgically reverse the colostomy, closing up the surgical openings. The new operation was performed in a large S.A. Tilde Pando Paolo hospital by one of Brasil Atiem's leading surgeons. Dr. Madiros waited impatiently to find out just what would be discovered when his patient Atiyah's abdomen was reopened for the first time since she had been given up for lost. The search for the tumor was negative, all that remained was a harmless formation of fibrous tissue. The intestine was rejoined, and began to function normally. 11 months later, the patient was without any sign of her previous devastating condition. Because he had followed this case from start to finish and was familiar with every detail of it, Dr. Madiros did not hesitate to publicly announce his findings. Many of his colleagues had had similar experiences with Arago and their patients, but hesitated to report the cases in medical journals or to the public. In view of the pending lawsuits against Arago, any such announcement was frowned on both by the Catholic Church and the medical associations. In spite of this, Madiros returned several more times to Congonhas do Campo. In the operations he observed, he was startled and impressed by what appeared to be almost instant scar forming of incisions, with no stitches being used at all. It was another inexplicable phenomenon that accompanied most of Arago Atiyah's healing work. Another doctor of considerable stature who was willing to run against the tide of official opinion was Dr. Ari Lex. He was a lecturer at the surgical clinic of S.A. Paulo University, a specialist in surgery of the stomach and digest 107, I system, and practiced at the Hospital das Clinicas, the largest hospital in South America. What intrigued him was that although the church and the medical societies were scouring the field to try to find someone anyone who had been harmed by Arago and who would testify against him in the impending legal action, they had been totally unsuccessful. If there were any such cases around, they were not making themselves known. By all logic, persons allegedly damaged by Arago Atiyah's crude surgery or prescriptions should certainly have been emerging on the scene by now. There were enough doctors and establishment priests out to get Arago, in fact, destroy him, that it should have been easy for them to find someone who at least felt he had been harmed by Arago. The fact that none had been uncovered was important supportive evidence for Arago Atiyah's validity, Dr. Lex felt. As a former president of the surgical section of the S.A. Paulo Medical Association, Lex was aware that he was treading on dangerous ground by making a study of Arago. He was known for his fight against any sort of quackery or unethical practices. In the course of this work he had uncovered a number of frauds and trickery, and was successful in exposing them. It became quickly apparent to him that Arago was an entirely different kettle of fish. He went to Congonhas alone, without any colleagues, because he had too many doubts that he would uncover anything special about Arago. He was surprised and pleased to find two other professors of medicine in Congonhas do Campo who had the same idea in mind. When he watched what happened that day in Arago Atiyah's clinic, he was thankful to have the other professionals there. Together, they watched four operations within the space of half an hour, scattered among some 30 non-surgical cases. Since Dr. Lex had never found a mediumistic healer who survived his scrutiny under test conditions, he watched carefully as Arago went to work. The only politeness Arago showed to his three distinguished visitors was to invite them to come as close as possible to observe. Dr. Lex quickly discerned that while Arago himself seemed to be in 108, a trance state, he made no attempt to use any hypnotic techniques on his patients, nor did he use any type of passes with his hands or other means of suggestion. Dr. Lex was particularly interested in this, because he felt it might explain some part of Arago Atiyah's success, but he was now convinced that the patients were not even in a partial trance state. The first operation was the drainage of a synovial cyst, without any surgical preparation or anesthesia, as usual. And, of course, no antisepsis. It was successfully completed in a matter of moments. For the second operation, Arago asked Dr. Lex if he wanted to hold the patient at Atiyah's arm. He did so, enabling him to get an extremely close view of the removal of a lipoma. Arago did this in less than half a minute. But what interested Dr. Lex most was the technique used. Instead of cutting the skin with the scalpel, Arrigo massaged the back of the blade across the arm until it suddenly opened. Then with his hands, he pressed down on the flesh, and the fatty tumor came out as a unit. In the third operation, Arrigo faced the same problem and operated in the same way. For the fourth, Arrigo permitted Dr. Lex to hold the patient at TMS head as he prepared to operate on a trigeum. This wing-like growth across the eye was firmly locked into the cornea. Arrigo picked up a pair of unsterilized nail scissors, as Dr. Lex watched in disbelief. No patient, he was sure, could stand the direct cutting into the eyeball without full anesthesia. But as usual, the patient was wide awake as Arrigo pushed the points of the scissors into the eye with unbelievable roughness, snipping freely at the eye tissue and talking in his German accent as he did so. The growth was removed cleanly, but the eye began to hemorrhage profusely, the blood starting to pour down the patient at TMS cheek. Arrigo looked to the ceiling and ordered the blood to stop. Then he took a piece of questionably clean cotton and pressed it into the eye. After a moment or two of wiping, he removed the cotton. The bleeding had stopped altogether. Questioned later by author J. Herculano Byers, Dr. Lex said, "Are the only possible adjectives I can find to define this are spectacular and astounding at TM 109. Then he went on to say, "A during all these operations, I talked with the patients, asking them if they felt any pain. The patients were conscious, quiet, did not react and said that they did not feel anything." Arrigo acted in a natural fashion, was confident of himself to the point that at one time he cleaned the scalpel violently on my colleague at TMS head. He added Dr. A also did not feel anything, despite the violence of the act at TM. Dr. Lex observed several of Arrigo at TMS A-pointed knife at TM examinations of a patient at TMS I, in which Arrigo literally stirred the knife far up inside the orbital cavity, looking away from the patient and talking to others as he did so. A. He sometimes made the eyeball to protrude as if it were going to come out of the eye socket at TM, Dr. Lex told Pyers. All of this without asepsis or anesthesia and without signs of pain to the patients at TM. But as admiring as Dr. Lex was about Arrigo at TMS form of surgery, he was distressed with his prescriptions. A. I was frightened by them at TM, Dr. Lex said. A. I consider them great absurdities. They do not seem to make any sense. Olobintin and kanamycin are really obsolete drugs. They have dangerous side effects and adverse reactions at TM. Dr. Madiros of course concurred with this. Yet he had seen the prescriptions work, and on inquiry had not found any harm coming from them as far as he could determine. This was hardly adequate research, he knew, and the problem was as puzzling as ever. Both Dr. Lex and Dr. Madiros agreed completely on one thing: serious research should be done on Arrigo A long, intensive, and complete, and under strict medical control. A. In spite of his faults at TM, Dr. Lex said, A. He is a remarkable phenomenon. I don't yet TMT criticize Arrigo alone. It seems to me he should merit greater attention from many scientific societies. The fact that there is no scientific control of the medium at TMS activities does expose him and his patients to a series of dangerous situations. There is also the danger of misuse of his faculties. Scientific proof is lacking at the moment. It should be established, of course. But I can say without question that I have observed for the first time a case of authentic paranormal phenomenon in my own field 110, of medicine at TM. Later, Dr. Lex was to return to see Arrigo and observe a confirmed case of cancer of the liver in which Arrigo removed the tumor with his hands, an unheard-of procedure. The biopsy reconfirmed a cancerous condition, and the patient at TMS full recovery was likewise confirmed. He was a wealthy lawyer, a solid, pragmatic materialist. When he recovered, he became a spiritist. There were other doctors, many of them, who came to Congonhas do Campo, either openly or covertly. Some came to scoff, but most went away completely convinced that here was one of the strangest cases in medical history. The consensus was that Arago was unbelievable, yet the cold, empirical evidence of the success of his operations left them with no choice other than believing the unbelievable. But there were not enough of them to mount any effective opposition in the face of the attitude of the medical societies. And even those who were convinced completely of Arago's TMS validity felt that he could not go on with his practice in an open, uncontrolled situation. Unscrupulous charlatans, inspired by Arago, would proliferate throughout the country, with utterly disastrous results for the public. Medical anarchy could develop. Anyone who appears to suspend the laws of physics is faced with overwhelming and totally unique problems. Among Arago's TMS problems was the further complication of his being a blasphemer and heretic in the eyes of the Catholic Church. Finally, after the long delay, the legal machinery of the court process came to a head. On August 1, 1956, an official named Helvisio Arantz, of the Robbery and Falsification Division of the State Police, sat down at his desk and wrote, "Judicial directive executing orders from the Secretary of Public Security of the State of Minas Gerais to verify the facts relating to the practice of illegal medicine by the individual known as José Tilda Copyright Arago, whose real name is José Tilda Copyright Pedro de Freitas, to inquire concerning the practice of illegal medicine. Arago and all the persons having knowledge of 111, these acts will be called. A prescription written by Arago can be found at the drugstore Farmacia Congonhas Limitada." The first detectives of the Policia to arrive in town were themselves immediately detected by the townspeople. Arago had already smoked out one of their advance scouts. The villagers were no less observant. The detectives met with nothing but resistance from most of them. Even with the threat that the withholding of information was against the law, few would talk against Arago. Most refused to give out names of those who had been treated by Arago, but of course there were Arago's TMS enemies, and these came forward willingly to testify. But since none of them had visited Arago's TMS clinic as patients, there was little concrete they could say. When word was noised about that Arago's TMS opponents were talking to the police, groundswell began among his supporters to testify in his favor. They would state publicly that no one had been harmed by Arago's TMS healing work and that thousands had been cured by him. What they did not realize was that even if they praised Arago to the skies in their testimony, they were digging his grave. Every testimonial that showed Arago as an effective healer was condemnatory in the eyes of the law. The police were not interested in whether he healed or not. All that needed to be proved was that Arago was practicing medicine. Even with the police filtering into the town, Arago continued his daily work. The long line in front of his clinic formed every morning with its cargo of sickness and despair, streaming in from below Horizonte, S.A. tilde Pando Paolo, Rio, across the border in Argentina, and elsewhere. One night, after a long day at TMS work, Arago climbed into bed next to Arlette, who was half asleep. Arago did not speak to her, but in a few moments she heard him begin to talk. He was praying for his enemies. 112.6. By sheer coincidence, it was in Congonhas do Campo that the idea for the extraordinary capital city of Brasilia was born. The village was also the place where the paths of Arago and President Juscelino Kubitschek crossed for the first time. It was an event that was to affect the lives of both. Kubitschek, a tall, powerful, striking man with a thick shock of black hair and a charisma all his own, campaigned vigorously throughout Brazil in his bid for the presidency in the 1955 elections. He was immensely popular wherever he went. He had been a strong supporter of President Vargas' ATM policies, and he eloquently pledged to the electorate that he would bring them 50 years of progress in 5. More frequently than not, his enemies would give him credit that he meant what he said. But even before he was elected, there was a stockpile of complaints about the extravagance of his ideas. Kubitschek's TMS background was as impressive as his appearance. A qualified physician, he had specialized in surgery both in Paris and the Middle East, and for many years afterward had served as a medical officer in various government agencies in Brazil. But the lure of politics grew in him. He went successively from the post of a federal deputy, to mayor of Belo Horizonte, to governor of the state of Minas Gerais. A cosmopolite, he spoke French and English as well as Portuguese, and was at ease in many foreign capitals. His pre-election campaign visit to Congonhas do Campo was marked by a speech in which he promised the crowd gathered in the Rue Maréchal Floriano that if elected he would meticulously respect the constitution. Only if this were done would there be peace in Brazil.